Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we are freshly squeezed right here in America. It's true. We have a great show again tonight for you. Unfortunately, Katie Wick from the Dr. Drew Show had to cancel. She had a family situation. She says everything should be fine. And Katie will be with us next week. I feel bad for Katie because every time I try and have her on the show to talk about Dr. Drew and the jurors in the Jody Arias trial, the people that she's talked to, every time I try and have her on, something happens. So how about I don't shave my eyebrows until Katie comes on the show? Let's see how fast I can grow a unibrow. Now, do you understand why I'm on radio and not TV? I hope so. My executive producer, Kimster, is not here tonight. Therefore, no matter what goes wrong, it's all Kimster's fault and then some. We do have a fantastic show. Later in the show, Mark Redwine will join us to wrap up our show and to discuss his missing son, Dylan. He was with us last week. There are still more questions, and I'm sure Mark is going to answer them for us tonight. First up, it's Cheryl McCollum. Cheryl is the director of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, and Cheryl is our eyes and ears in the George Zimmerman case. And Cheryl, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio again. It's getting closer, isn't it?
It is getting much closer. They kick this thing off tomorrow.
That's right. It's a jury selection tomorrow. Is that correct?
Yes, which will be, in my opinion, the most important part.
Let's talk about that. What is the defense going to look for in the Zimmerman case, and what is the prosecution going to look for in a witness?
Well, of course, they both want somebody that's going to be open-minded, and they will want somebody that, you know, says maybe they don't know all the facts and maybe hasn't already made up their mind, if they can find that person. And if that person is being completely truthful, you know, when they say that. But it's going to be difficult to find somebody that doesn't really already have an opinion. But certainly, they're going to want somebody that's open-minded. You know, it's a tricky walk, because if you say, hey, I want mother, then, yes, they're going to sympathize and their heart will break for Miss Fulton. But at the same time, Trisha, something happens in that jury room where jurors get holier than thou and in front of other strangers will say, well, I would have never let my son wouldn't have wore so-and-so. So they're just going to be real careful, you know, with that. The other thing is they want to be sure they get, you know, a kind of an eclectic group, really, so maybe they can be more understanding in that room. Everybody comes from a different place. Not everybody's a parent. Not everybody is, you know, 19. Not everybody's employed. So they're going to want to, you know, kind of a cross-section of, you know, Sanford or wherever, if they get a change of venue.
Let's talk about that. You said if they get a change of venue, are they still trying to get a change of venue?
I have not heard that it's going to be anywhere different. So I don't know if they're waiting to spring that, or I don't know what exactly is happening with that, but I'm just saying, if it's not in West Palm Beach or it's not in Daytona, I mean, I haven't heard. You follow me? So as far as I know, it's going to be right there.
Well, let's face it. No matter where George Zimmerman goes, people are going to have their opinions already. You have to literally be living under a cave deep cave, at least with the bats, to not understand the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. And that in itself is a very scary thing. Now, you mentioned that they're going to be looking for jurors who won't go in there and say, well, I'd never let my son dress like this, and I'd never do this with my son, and on and on and on. So they're looking for people that won't demonize Trayvon Martin. Isn't that what the defense is going to try to do? I mean, the judge has really limited what they can say about Trayvon, but really, when we get down to it, when we brush away all the baloney, isn't that what the defense is going to try and do, is demonize Trayvon Martin, and can they do it?
I think they're going to do both. They're going to be real careful to build George up and make him look like the neighbor you would want. At the same time, they can't attack Trayvon too hard, because O'Mara doesn't want to come off looking like a racist either. So he's going to dance on that line. And the other thing is, he's going to wait. If the prosecution starts to say what a good kid he was, what a good student, what a good son, then they've just opened the door. And now I've got relevance to say, Judge, I was told I couldn't use this before, but it's now relevant because they're saying things that we know are not true. They're not factual.
So in other words, someone could just slip up and say he was a good kid, and that literally
absolutely
could open that Pandora's box of his being suspended, drug use, all of that.
If she just says with a heavy heart, he never caused me any trouble, Ms. Fulton, that's not true. You sent him to his father.
Right. And then you can bring it all up, and then
the text messages where he says, my mom threw me out.
Right.
Your mom threw you out? That's interesting, because she just said you never caused her any trouble.
And they will not allow those in unless there is an opening.
Unless somebody opens the door.
Wow, that just seems like that's an easy door for someone to open, don't you think?
It's a real easy door, which is another reason I don't think the parents are going to take the stand.
Mm-hmm. You're right, because that would be... Putting myself in their place, it would be impossible for me not to say something good about my son. And that's where everybody's heart breaks for Trayvon's parents. It is knowing that they've lost their son. Let's talk about George Zimmerman for a moment. In my personal opinion, I don't know the man, but just what I have seen of him, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. He called 911 how many times as a neighborhood watch person? Do you remember the amount? What was it?
I want to say 48.
Yeah. I mean,
it was dozens and dozens.
Yes. And everybody else here, I'm sure, has called 911 a few times in their life, but that's it. It's not 48 times. So he had a propensity to kind of jump at things, and maybe that was good. Maybe all of those calls were absolutely legit. But with George Zimmerman, you have some real hurdles to get over, because what he appears, I'm not saying this is what he is, but George Zimmerman appears to be a wannabe cop who wants to try and stop the bad guys, and to him, everybody who he doesn't know is a bad guy. Am I perhaps putting that correctly or incorrectly? Talk to
me. Well, they're going to dissect every single call. So when he called that a garage door was open, was he profiling? No. When he called because there was a dog in his driveway, was he profiling? How about the woman weaving in and out of traffic? She wasn't profiling. When he called about the kids too loud in the pool, was he profiling? The kids were playing in the street and he thought that was dangerous. Was he profiling? And here's the way it's going to work to his benefit. If I'm O'Mara, and I don't know the number, I think it was 48, but whatever it was, if it was 24, it's too many, okay, for the average person to conceptualize why he would call that often. But let's say it's 24 times, okay? He never pulled his gun but once. He never hurt anybody but once. He didn't have a propensity for violence. He didn't want to shoot anybody. The only time he pulled his weapon is when he believed he was going to be killed.
Do you think the defense has anything up their sleeves that will show that George Zimmerman had pulled his gun before on people or had bragged about pulling his gun? Do we have any sense of what, I shouldn't say defense, the prosecution, what the prosecution is going to say about George Zimmerman?
You know, it can very well be, but keep in mind, they've had to turn over their witness list. So if there's somebody on there, hey, George, who's this guy? Oh, that's the guy I bought my gun from. That's the guy for the gun range. George, what kind of conversations were you having at the gun range? So, yeah, I mean, people brag. People say stuff. Again, you're talking about a man that strapped on a Tech-9 to go to the grocery store.
Right. And that, to me, is a very compelling image that I think the jury will have. I wish, on a personal level, and Cheryl, you know more about the law than I do, but it seems like, maybe I'm wrong, that it should only be fair that some of what Trayvon's background, some of his background be let in because of what George Zimmerman says he perceived Trayvon Martin doing. And if Trayvon Martin was doing things in his background in the past that are the same type of things, don't you think that should be allowed in? I mean, I would think so.
I agree. But I'm also, I believe that any autopsy photograph or crime scene photograph should be seen. That's what happened. You're right. So if somebody like Nicole Brown, when her head was cut off, show that.
Yeah.
That's what happened. If y'all are going to judge that man, then look at what he's accused of doing.
There you go.
I think fair is fair. Now, what they've got to be real careful about here is to say, okay, he's got this background, but George couldn't have known that. So George wasn't basing this on anything but action. Now, yes, it would be fair. Yes, he's looking at this house like he's casing it. Does he have that in his background? Then answer me that. If he's acting like he's on drugs and then it turns out through the autopsy there's drugs in his system, we got to count that. That's fair.
Right. That's what I think. And the judge is not allowing any of that in, correct?
Correct. But again, that's an awful lot of people to talk to that nobody is going to slip up and nobody's going to say anything. Because again, you got 12 people sitting up there, right? And with an alternate, you know, 13. There's not a teacher. There's not a buddy. There's not the principal. There's not a coach. Nobody is coming out talking about what an awesome person he is. Where are his friends?
Well, that's true. Yes, you're right. You're not hearing the friends.
That's right. Mm-hmm. There's a reason. And I'm telling you, that family, once they got connected to the machine, right, it all stopped. You never saw Dee Dee. You never had the girlfriend pray around in tears. The buddies didn't show up anywhere wearing football jerseys, talking about him. Nothing. Not one teacher. Not one.
You're talking about
neighbor.
Trayvon. Right.
Juries aren't stupid. Where are they?
Right.
Well, that's
I see
very
what you're
telling.
Saying.
You know, birds of a feather.
And let's face it. Jurors, no matter what, they do have some sort of preconceived notion of something, especially in a big, high-profile case like this. It's impossible to get somebody who hasn't seen something. And again, I'm really on the fence on this one. It's one of the few times I am. But I just keep going back to, even though he had a right to carry it, if he hadn't had that gun, none of this would have happened. We had some confusion last week, Cheryl, and I need to clear this up with you. Let's talk about the 911 call because that is so important. Now, these jerks at NBC edited George Zimmerman's 911 call when he's talking about Trayvon. They edited it to make it sound more racist. They took a whole bunch out of the middle and made it look like he said, you know, there's a kid here, he's black, he's up to no good. They made it sound something along those lines. Made it sound just horrible. When in reality, he said nothing of the thing. Nothing like that. Now, last week you said that, if I remember correctly, that the racial slur that is in there, and I apologize, but I'm going to say it because so everybody will know what we're talking about. Supposedly, George Zimmerman said, fucking coon. Now, that is just a weird racial slur.
Weird.
But here's the thing. On the other 911 calls that NBC didn't touch, I can still hear it. And last week you said that you thought it was edited in. I can still hear it on other 911 calls. What's going on with that? Is it there? Did somebody edit it in? Did he say it? Was he saying something else? What's going on?
Well, my understanding, and there should be multiple websites that show this, that was placed in there. Other people picked it up and played it as though it was accurate. So once it hit, that's the one that's been out. That's right.
Okay.
So it might be somewhere attributed to a legitimate news organization. But again, if y'all go back and just type in, it'll show you that was false.
Okay.
What he said is these assholes always get away.
Right. So what we need to do then is find a tape that is not associated with the NBC tape that hasn't been touched that way and go to another news source, grab that tape, and see what's in there.
If you go to TMZ or Smoking Gun, the actual police tape is there.
Okay, that's
what
I'll do.
You can hear everything he says. And keep in mind, again, you're going to argue. This is one of those things where I see red, you see blue.
Yes.
And I can't change my mind, and you can't change your mind, and we're not going to change each other's mind.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a 911 operator ask, is he white, black, or Hispanic? And I hear George Zimmerman say, I think black.
Right.
Now, I'm sorry. That doesn't sound like a racist to me yet.
No, not yet. Doesn't. You're right.
And when you listen to George talk on this tape, he sounds like he's on marijuana.
He does.
He sounds like the biggest pothead. He's like, yeah, we've had some break-ins. And I mean, really, George, get to your point.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not even exasperated. He's not upset. He's not angry. He's just, hey, I was on my way to the store. I noticed this guy. I know he doesn't live there. You know, he's acting funny. It's raining. He's staring at the house. So he, again, you said he doesn't sound like the sharpest tool in the shed. That's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that to me is clear is he's not mad. It's not
right.
like he's calling, going, y'all get over here. These assholes always get away. I'm actually sick of it. And what, he wasn't hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly not premeditated, which is the reason we're at murder two anyway. So now what they're going to have to prove is George's actions. And his actions were just a threat to another human being's safety. So what the prosecution is going to show is that George tracked him, he stalked him, and Trayvon, out of fear, fought back.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you think that'll be easy? Do you think that, I think that might be fairly easy. Nothing's easy, but I mean, to me that doesn't sound like it'd be extremely hard to prove. What do you think?
Well, George passed the polygraph, whatever that matters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
George, everything he said on the 911 tape can be proven accurate.
Mm-hmm.
He's running. The girlfriend said he's running. And again, when they say to George, we don't need you to do that, he says, okay. And he starts to get out of breath, and then he's able to catch his breath, which to me signifies he quit running.
Okay.
And then he continues to look for an address because he's continuously asked, where are you at? And again, you've already said he's not that bright. So he's looking and he's walking, he says, trying to find an address. And keep in mind, when they question him and he gives his version of events, he does not know that there's not an eyewitness.
Okay. So he's,
so
what you're saying is, right, you're
liar.
Saying that he doesn't, he's doesn't know if there's an eyewitness or not, so he's more than likely would tell the truth because he doesn't know who saw what, right?
Right, but then he tells the police, this guy on this bottom apartment or house, he came out, he saw. I begged him to help me, but he said he was going to go call 911, and George says, I don't need you to do that. I need you to help me.
Okay. Well, you know, all of this sounds very compelling, and it's true. But I just keep thinking, I kind of shrug my shoulders and think, even if that's brought out, I just don't see them finding him not guilty. And it's, we all know why. Nobody wants problems for if he's found not guilty. I just it just makes me sick. Now, here's the other thing. What if, and I may have asked you this last week, but I want to ask again. What if by some strange phenomenon, we find out that it is Trayvon screaming, help me, help me, help me, and everybody agrees it is. Does that really take the wind out of George's sails or
no
not?
Question. Absolutely.
Okay. So that to me, that's so key. That is so
that's
key.
That's Mark Furman in the N-word. It's over.
It's done.
It's over. It's done. But keep in mind, and I'm going to say this again, because this is something that I've, you know, made the students do. Listen to that over and over and over. Listen to George talk and then listen to it. And tell me whether you think that sounds like a grown man or a kid. Because there's a part early on where he's screaming, help. And the word is extended out. And here's the thing, Tricia. As many cases as you've been involved in, when has the defendant ever claimed to be screaming what the victim was screaming?
I've never heard of it. I've never heard of that. Never.
Never. I'm telling you, George Zimmerman is not that smart to be the first one I've ever heard of in 30-something years. I do not believe he had the wherewithal to say, oh, God, this kid was screaming. I'm going to tell everybody that was me. And he knew verbatim what the child screamed because he repeated it for police, saying it was him. And then, again, he did not know there weren't eyewitnesses. 11 different people called 911. Only two supposedly saw who was on the ground and who was on top.
Do we know what those two are going to say?
Well, one's going to say George is on the bottom, and the other's going to say Trayvon is on the bottom.
Oh, great.
But when George, absolutely. But when George walked the police through the scene, he explained that.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he shot Trayvon, that he said, okay, you got me. And George didn't know if he hit him or not. So he pushed him. He fell off of him. And George thought he's going to hit me again with whatever was in his hand because George believed there was something in his hand. So he was holding his wrist. So now George is on top of him. That's when another man comes up with a flashlight, and George says, help me restrain him.
Mm-hmm.
Because George was thinking he was fixing to get hit again.
Again.
Is what so George claims.
So in other words, one saw George on the bottom, one saw George on the top, and it very well could be exactly that. Man, there are so many twists.
He came up with that awful quick and passed the polygraph.
Oh, boy. I just keep thinking, Cheryl, all of this just sounds good for George Zimmerman, but I just don't have, I guess, a lot of faith. I just think they're going to find him guilty. Maybe a hung jury.
Maybe he may be guilty. I think he's absolutely guilty of involuntary manslaughter. I think he's absolutely guilty, you know, of not staying in his car for his own, that's not guilty, but you know what I'm saying, for his own safety. I wouldn't tell my son, hey, get out and see where that guy went.
Yeah, go follow him. Go see what he's doing.
Then let him run. Good, bye. You know, but that's just for his own protection. But, again, Tricia, here's what bothers me about this case. It's the perfect storm.
It is.
It's the perfect storm. Because if somebody's in your community that you do not recognize and you believe they're acting suspicious, you can follow them to see what they're doing. You can ask them, can I help you? You can call
That's
the police
right.
and say, there's a suspicious person here, and this is where they're headed.
Mm-hmm.
That's not illegal.
None of that's illegal.
Nope. Trayvon can stand wherever he freaking wanted to stand, whether it was under the light or under the shed next to the mailboxes or walking in the rain. Not illegal to walk in the rain.
No.
It was the perfect storm. But to George, there's a guy in a hoodie standing in the rain. That's weird. In front of my friend's house, Taffy, right? That's not right. Taffy's house has already been burglarized. I'm calling the police. Well, the police don't come, and the police don't come, and the police don't come. So I'm going to go tell them, hey, the guy just took off running. Let me see if I can see where he went. Nope, we don't need to do that. Okay. What address are you at? I don't know. Let me keep walking and see if I see a number. It's the perfect storm.
It is.
Again, I'm going to have a hard time putting somebody in prison for second-degree murder that stayed on the phone 5 minutes with the police. That don't sound like somebody that's fixing to commit murder to me.
And you're right. It is the perfect storm. Everything that could have gone wrong in a weird, twisted sense, meaning there is not a perfect eyewitness. There isn't a perfect identification on the phone. It's all conjecture, and it's all what everybody thinks. It is all their opinion. And then you throw in the racial element, and it can get so ugly so very, very, very quickly. Let's talk a little bit about a lot of people have been asking for opening a forum on Web Sleuths for George Zimmerman. Last time we had the Trayvon Zimmerman case up for discussion on Web Sleuths, it got so ugly. I mean, it was the ugliest thing I have ever seen in my life. We had to shut it down. Now, we are putting together something where people will be able to go and talk about the case. I don't have it quite ready yet, but we are working on it. We'll have it up very soon. But I'm telling you, if Cheryl, if it gets ugly like that again, if people start threatening me and calling me a racist, I mean, friendships were lost. It's like you can't say anything that is positive towards George without being called a racist. You can't say anything that's positive toward Trayvon without being, you know, called whatever name, like, oh, you're just, you know, you're just a liberal or whatever. It's awful. And it's terrible that we just can't discuss it like adults. So we're going to do our best. I'll do my best to get something up and moving here very quickly since the jury is being selected. But I'm just laying it out there. If it gets ugly like that again, we're going to have to shut it down. And that's too bad because we need to talk about it. But we can't have people coming in and calling names and threatening. I had threats. I mean, it was awful. I don't know if you've had anything like that. Have people been coming to you or any of your students
we
have
get threats
issues?
All the time, but,
oh, really?
Yeah, we get threats all the time. Sure, but we just call it fan mail and we put it up on the wall. Sure. But we get fan mail a lot in our
At the at the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, you get fan mail.
Oh, you wouldn't even believe.
I love it.
You know, we worked on Chandra Levy, and then, you know, we got such mail because she was of the Jewish faith. And I'm like, seriously? You know, I mean, there's so much. But here's the thing. Hate is hate is hate. And it only fuels us at the Institute, I'll be honest with you. I teach at a predominantly black college. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. And so my students obviously came into that room with opinions, and that was awesome because it's real life. We've got other colleges that are part of the Institute that have a very low African-American population, and that's good, too. So everybody's learning from everybody, but what my students are learning, I don't want them not to be angry. Be angry, but be angry about the right thing. And if you can chop this down to say, how can I make sure that there's not another Trayvon? What can I do to send a message? Then that's what you need to do. But it has to be based on fact.
Right.
You can't just walk in and say, George Zimmerman is a racist. Prove
exactly.
That. Because if you can't prove it, then you should not say it. And again, there was all that talk about these cops are racist, cops are racist. Those police officers dropped to their knees and provided CPR to that child immediately. It was, of course, to no avail. But that doesn't sound like a racist to me when a grown man will put his mouth on another man to try to breathe life into him. So you attack the police, but O'Mara's going to attack them too because they do nothing for 44 days. Your white chief of police does nothing. Well, here's a new black bishop. A black one didn't either.
Right.
Exactly. He didn't either.
Yeah, okay. So there's enough blame to go around. There's enough
blame.
Yeah,
neither
being lackadaisical, non-caring.
Right. The police didn't take it out, but suddenly here comes a special prosecutor, and she can see something that nobody else could see in 44 days. Well, they're going to have to contend with that.
Yes.
They are.
That's true.
So there's so much. And I think that, you know, the prosecution is going to hit really hard with, you know what? Trayvon didn't follow anybody. Trayvon didn't attack anybody, and Trayvon never killed anybody.
Right.
George
Trayvon
did.
Didn't have a gun. Trayvon, yes, George did.
Yes, Trayvon
George had
didn't
a gun.
Have a gun. George did. George did. George did.
Exactly. And
so,
that
we've got to fight that. And good luck.
Exactly,
but there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger picture. And that's, once again, the Second Amendment, losing a right, losing a right, losing a right.
It is going to be a long, hot summer. How long do you think the case will be in court, Cheryl?
6 weeks.
Really? You think it'll be that? I think that's kind of short. Don't you think it'll be a little longer, maybe? Or no?
Just a guess. I don't. Who are they going to put on the stand? Both sides don't have four. I mean, your ear witnesses are a joke. You know, the autopsy's short and sweet. He had one injury, basically. They can't talk about the tattoos. They can't talk about the THC, so let's move on. He went right through the heart. Okay, how far away was he? Well, about 10 to 18 inches. Okay, why wasn't there blowback on George? Well, because the hoodie caught it. Okay, next. I mean, there's not a lot people can say. Nobody
yeah.
saw it. And what they saw was 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And that was it. And again, we know eyewitness testimony can be wonderful or it can be absolutely wrong. And it
right.
is a perfect storm, Cheryl McCollum. It absolutely is. Cheryl, I just want to touch on what we're going to try and do next week. You
okay.
teach students about all kinds of cases at the Investigative Cold Case Institute Research Center. Did I get that right?
Close enough. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, you teach some amazing things. And in your classroom, you're going to have a defense side and a prosecution side. And we're going to hear from those sides next Sunday, hopefully. If it's not next Sunday, then the Sunday after. We are going to let these students on Trisha's True Crime Radio present the case, just as it should be presented in the courtroom. We'll have our listeners ask questions after each side is done, and then we're going to decide who's guilty, who's not guilty, maybe even figure out what really happened. I think that is going to be so fascinating and such an interesting way to do it. And Cheryl, I can't thank you enough for coming to us and letting us be a part of it. It's going to be fun.
Oh, no, I thank you, because I tell you, the students have worked so hard, and they've had to put their own biases aside. Again, one thing that Sherry Jefferson did, who's the lead instructor on this project, she let the students sign up. Do you want to be prosecution or defense? And honey, they went to signing those sheets like you wouldn't believe, because they already had an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Then Dr. Jefferson switched the teams on them.
Oh, I love
it. Here, you think
I love
Georgia
that.
Needs to go to prison? Now you got to defend him.
Mm-hmm.
And you think George ought to walk on home? You got to put him in prison. So
that's
they're
brilliant.
Having to fight. It is brilliant, right? I wish it were my idea. Well, she's not here. I should take credit. It was my
you
idea.
You should. Go ahead.
No, I'm telling you, Dr. Jefferson, when she gets on your show, Trisha, she is going to be so insightful, and she is so dynamic. Your audience is made for her. I'm telling you.
That's perfect.
They will love listening to her, and she comes from a background that is so solid and just outstanding that they will be better potential jurors for listening to her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is wonderful. I can't wait.
Other things that might happen, she has a way of squashing that too. She's just awesome. You know, believe what you believe, but you can only prove what you can prove, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she's just fantastic. So she'll kind of set it up, and then we'll let the students do their thing. And then maybe she can talk a little bit longer, and you and I can maybe tally the votes, and then come back at the end and let the students know, hey, we got 800-4, or we got 701-702, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if the students do their job right, and your audience comes through like I know they can, I think we'll be pretty close to what's going to happen outside any surprises. Because, again, the students don't know everything that the defense has or the prosecution has, but they have every single possible element that is available right now. Like, they've spent hours watching and rewatching the interrogation tape.
Okay.
They know it backwards and forwards. So when George asked the detective, have you ever shot anybody? And she says, no. He says, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that doesn't sound like somebody that's proud of what he did.
Right. Exactly. There's so many things I'm sure that both sides will be able to use. But again, Cheryl, that's just brilliant that she had them sign up for the side they wanted to be on and then switch them. You gotta love that woman. And that's gonna teach those students more than anything. Cheryl McCollum, thank you so much. Give us the address of your Facebook page and we'll look forward to you next week. How can they people get in touch with you?
There's one, it's just Cheryl McCollum, and it's the cold case. Investigative Research Institute logo, and then there's another one, Cheryl McCollum, director of the Institute, and that has the logo of my book that I wrote. And listen, I want to tell you, I've gotten some phenomenal emails from some of your listeners that are willing to help on the Kirsten Davis case and Drew Peterson. Yes, and I just want to tell them, again, thank you. I've responded to every person personally, not a student. Those are mine.
Mm-hmm.
So any misspelled words, I can prove it was mine. I'm not
wonderful.
A good speaker, so it was me. But I appreciate the help, and we're going to get back to them with some case files where they can go to work.
Wonderful. We do have one question from our listening audience. Can we take it real quickly?
Absolutely.
Sure. Okay, hold on. Let's go to, I believe this is Michael in Minnesota. Michael, do you have a question for Cheryl McCollum?
I do. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Cheryl.
Sure.
I enjoy listening to you very much. You mentioned that your students are primarily Black.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is such a racially charged, you said they most of them walked in with a preformed opinion. Is this going to be divided along racial lines, or do you believe that we have to give the races more credit and they'll be able to actually see if this was a legitimate shooting, or does race muddy the water so much that we all lose sight of our objectivity?
That's a great question, and I'm going to give you the best answer I can, Michael.
Okay.
What tends to happen with my students when they give me their facts that they understand? Where did you get it from? It's usually Black radio or something that is more geared toward just that community. So a lot of times it is going to be more emotionally charged than maybe the news organization that I was listening to, where they may say George Zimmerman will be in court tomorrow for a bond hearing. My students are hearing, hey, we got to keep him in there. It ought to be $10 million bond. I mean, I hadn't heard that, but they heard it. So if you're listening to the Reverend Jackson, you're going to be a lot more geared toward knowing George needs to be in prison than if you're listening to Fox News. So, no, I don't think that it is deliberate. I think if you're a news organization, if you have a preference, you're only getting one side or the other. And I'll give you another example to clear up what I'm saying. If you listen to I Love Barack Obama Radio versus I Hate Barack Obama Radio, you wouldn't even know they were talking about the same man.
Amen. That's the truth, boy.
Okay. Yeah.
Same with this case. When Reverend Al Sharpton says they didn't even put crime scene tape up, they're all racist. There was absolutely crime scene tape put up. And they're racist based on what? They tried to save him. They called, you know, their supervisor to the scene. They had everybody transported. They handcuffed George. They took George in for questioning for 5 hours. They gave him a polygraph. They made him go back to the scene and do the video. Who got preferential treatment? The man was under arrest for all intents and purposes. He didn't have a lawyer with him. Daddy didn't go rescue him. But
yeah,
we're saved
by
laying in the rain. Yes. Nothing is perfect here. I'm telling you, it's one of the worst situations. And again, Michael, one thing, I don't know if you were here when I talked to Tricia after coming back from Stanford, but as a mother walking that scene, I think I was very honest when I told you I wish I'd never done it. Because as a mama, all I could think about was he should have been home. He could have made it home. And it just, he was right there. I mean, 30 feet from your back door, come on.
So tragic.
But he didn't belong there. Like you said, didn't you say last week, it's a 10-minute walk. Why? What was he doing in the rain, dilly-dallying?
Absolutely. But again, let's say he was having a fight with his girlfriend, or let's say they were having phone sex. He didn't want to go home. Maybe he's waiting 15 more minutes to fight with her or romance her. I don't know what he was doing. Maybe he was casing the house. But casing the house ain't worth dying.
That's the truth.
Well, I just wish that somehow we would evolve as a nation where we wouldn't notice the color of each other's skin.
Sure.
And, you know, any of it, from sexual preferences to any of it. I can't figure out why we can't move beyond, like so many other countries have, but it doesn't seem like we've made any progress.
Well, what progress we've made is very, very slow. So
and
we'll
fragile.
Just keep on.
I mean, it
and
only
takes one
case.
Mm-hmm. We'll just keep on keeping on, and hopefully, shows like this and people like you coming on to talk will hopefully get it moving quicker and be more strong as we move along. Michael, thank you so much. Cheryl, you are a doll. Thank you. Both of you, fantastic tonight. I really appreciate it. Michael, I'll just put you right back on hold if that's okay, if you'd like to listen to the rest of the show.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold right now. And Cheryl, thank you. We will get together during the week, and we'll have a very special show next week with the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman trial. It is going to be emotional, but maybe, just maybe next week when you listen, you might change your mind. Cheryl, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Tricia.
Take care. I'll be in touch, okay? Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness. That is, I just don't know. What Michael in Minnesota said was right. What Cheryl said was right. What people who are fighting for Trayvon, what they say is right. I don't know. That's my problem. I don't know. I'm grateful I'm not on that jury because I just don't know. But one thing I do know is we do have a wonderful sponsor for our show tonight. And the Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by all the no-kill animal shelters in the U.S. There's some in your area. Our sponsor, in honor of his wife, Nance, has asked all of you to please support the no-kill shelters right by your home. You can find them. Just look on the internet. These shelters need volunteers, obviously need money. They need animal food, just about everything you can think of they could use. So look up your local no-kill shelter and offer to help. Please, everyone can do their part to help our innocent animals find a good home. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to change direction now. He was on here last week. He took the hard questions. He didn't back down from them. I am talking about Mark Redwine. His son, Dylan, has been missing since November of 2012. Dylan came out to visit his father, Mark, for Thanksgiving. It was a Thanksgiving arranged visit, and he disappeared, and that is really all we know. Now, there has been suspicion on Mark, quite a bit of suspicion on Mark, and Mark has taken to the airwaves and is now answering those critics and telling us that his focus is finding Dylan. Mark Redwine, thank you again for joining us tonight.
Tricia, you're welcome, and I would like to thank you for the opportunity to be a part of this show.
Well, thank you, and I want you to know you will always have a place on the show if you would like. I've offered the same thing to your former wife, Elaine, that's Dylan's mother. I just feel that not talking about it is wrong. Talking about it is the right thing to do. I want to start out with something. I just got a text from Elaine a little bit ago, Mark, and I'm not trying to ambush you here. I just didn't have a chance here. It just happened a bit ago, and it's something that she told me. Okay, so hold on. Let me get to it here. Okay, we're almost there. We go. I asked her how it went mediation, and she said that. And I asked if she wanted to come on, and she said that she asked you questions, and that your answers she didn't get the answers that she wanted. And when I asked her what those questions were, she said they were questions that was based on information that law enforcement told her, okay? And she doesn't want to leave. She doesn't want to reveal those right now. So I don't know if you know what she's talking about, what she's saying as far as those questions, but based on something that law enforcement told her, she asked you some questions, and she feels that you did not respond, and she didn't get the answers that she wanted. Anything like that sound familiar? Would you like to respond to that, please?
Well, I don't know specifically what she's referring to. I can tell you that part of, and it's not really mediation. It's more of a conflict resolution, and the people are taking more of a facilitator role. In that. But one of the things that was brought up and I think is valuable, and it's not something that I don't know. It's not. It's just something I don't know how to do very well, probably, is to ask better questions and get more understanding. If I'm not getting an answer that I understand, it's important to clarify that. And, you know, I would think that the same thing would be true for my former wife, that if she got an answer from me that was unclear, that we would want to make that more specific or you know, ask it in a way where, you know, we're getting the answer that we're looking for from her. So to be, I don't know what she's referring to necessarily.
Okay.
But, you know, there was a lot of things that went on in that.
Well, if you would like to talk about the what do you call it, conflict resolution, just kind of a little background in case people are just joining us. Mark Redwine and his former wife, Elaine, do have trouble communicating. I don't think they would say that that is, they wouldn't deny that. And since Dylan has been missing, both sides have been wanting to communicate, and it's been failing. So Mark arranged to have a conflict resolution meeting, and I believe the person that you're working with is from law enforcement. Is that correct, Mark?
Well, no, not really. There was a law enforcement person involved in the meeting, but it's a group of people out of the Boulder, Colorado area, whose primary purpose is mediation, conflict resolution, and that can vary from, you know, people like Dylan's mother and I in our situation. It can, you know, between businesses out there. It could even be other countries that are involved in conflict resolution. So they're very widespread, and they're very educated, and they're very knowledgeable about things, and, you know, I think that it was a very positive step in the right direction. You know, not a lot was accomplished necessarily in one day, but it's a starting point.
What was accomplished that you can talk about?
Well, the two things that weren't accomplished were, obviously, neither one of us received an invitation from the other for dinner to sit around and talk about the old times. But more importantly, I don't think that either one of us has changed our opinion of the other or what we have in the way of a theory that it implicates each other. That being said, I think that it's impossible for both of us to be right, but it's not impossible by any means for both of us to be wrong. And that being said, you know, these people have 2,000 eyes that are now involved in this. They span 8 separate countries. So obviously, you know, we're taking this to an international level, which is a good start. You know, we did the best we could with what we had to work with. Unfortunately, for me and my former wife, you know, we don't see eye to eye now. We've never seen eye to eye on many things during the course of our 18-year marriage, and certainly we don't see eye to eye as we've gone through a very bitter divorce.
When you say you're taking it international, it's, you have stated before that you do not believe Dylan is to be found anywhere close by the home. You feel that he's outside maybe even the state of Colorado. But when you say internationally, what's going to happen? How are you going to take this to an international level?
Well, you know, that's my perspective, and obviously it's a gut feeling that I have that I don't believe that Dylan is anywhere near my home or anywhere in the area in which I live. That being said, I do know from Elaine, and she can correct us if I'm wrong in this, that her mother, being German, before she passed away, was assisting in putting out a flyer in search of Dylan that was done in German. And I know that based on what Elaine said, that there are flyers being done in multiple different languages that can be distributed throughout the world.
Okay, so just the thing is, as we know, Mark, we've had over the years several shocking cases where we assumed that a kidnapped child was dead and they turned out not to be. And now I think our eyes are open as a country that anything is possible. And that's the feeling I'm getting from you, is you're saying anything's possible. Let's get Dylan's flyers out to wherever we can get them because you never know. Am I correct? I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but...
No, and that's exactly right. That's exactly how I feel. This is all about Dylan, and this is all about finding Dylan and doing everything that we possibly can, not only as residents of the area in which I live, but residents of the state of Colorado, residents of the country as a whole, and even farther than that in terms of the people in various different countries. I mean, nobody knows where Dylan is. He can be anywhere. He could be in Mexico. He could be in Germany. He could be in Australia. You know, there's been people calling in tips from as far away as Australia and various other countries. So, you know, for us to not be turning over every stone, looking in every stump, and turning over every log is unacceptable to me. Mm-hmm. And whether that needs to start at my front door and work its way out, I don't know the answer to that. I support anybody that is willing to do anything in the efforts to find Dylan and search wherever we need to look. I want to believe that Dylan is out there and that he's not anywhere in this area, and that's the direction I'm going. But that doesn't mean that, you know, everybody has to follow my lead on that.
Mark, I think you would agree that at the beginning there were some misconceptions. You feel there were some misconceptions about you, and you kind of stayed quiet. And then you went on the Dr. Phil show. And so there are people out there that have a very, how can I put this, not a very good opinion of you. I think you will admit to that, correct?
Well, and I do, and I understand where that comes from. I mean, I don't think being a parent of a missing child is ever easy. And mm-hmm. obviously it's important to understand that, you know, Dylan went missing from my house. And, you know, whether that is coined, you know, being on my watch or however we want to look at that, you know, obviously that puts me at the top of the list, specifically as it relates to law enforcement, and I embrace that. You know, at every opportunity I've spoken with law enforcement, I've cooperated with them at every turn. I've done everything that they have asked me to do. And, you know, I can't change what people's perception is. What I can tell you that it is very difficult for any parent, and I certainly empathize with Elaine and all that she's had to endure in the last little bit, given the fact that not only are we dealing with, you know, Dylan being missing, but recently mm-hmm. your mother has passed away, and I know that a very close friend of hers has been diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. I mean, that's got to be a lot for any one person to bear.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and so I empathize with that. What I don't understand is the constant need to, you know, put her needs specifically above all others. And I say that because I feel like in many ways the efforts that she's making don't address specifically what is important here, which in my opinion is finding Dylan.
Okay, let's back up here. Now, this is a touchy subject because you and I have talked about this, and I think it's important that that you don't say negative things about Elaine, because then it makes it like, you know, you're not putting Dylan number one. So tell me what you mean by that. I need a little bit more explanation because I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, and it's not that I'm trying to be negative in terms of Elaine in any way, shape, or form, but I think that, you know, some of the things that she says directly to me via some of her text messages, some of her emails, is in stark contrast to the things that she says, you know, to the media and people, as she wants people to understand it. And, you know, I understand, and again, I empathize with all that she's been going through, but this is not about her, and this is not about me. This is about our son. This is about Dylan, and the fact that he's been missing for almost 7 months now, and what are we doing to find him?
Mm-hmm. So what is it, if you don't mind? Can you be more specific, or would you rather not?
Well, being more specific with you as it relates to...
As to what Elaine is saying to the public and then says to you.
Well, that's a touchy subject for me to talk to.
Okay.
About,
I don't,
because I certainly don't want to come across as a father who is not in any way concerned about what how this has affected Dylan's mother. I understand what she's going through. I'm going through the same kind of things. This isn't about her and I. This is about Dylan. And before I go out there and start, you know, blaming her, pointing fingers at her, or doing anything along those lines, I think that the most important thing that her and I can be doing, and everybody that's involved in this, is finding Dylan. And that's where I'm trying to keep the focus. And I think that in so many ways, that's not been the case over the last several months.
Well, let's talk about Dylan. What I'd like to do tonight, so we can refresh our memories, is let's just talk about the night that you picked up Dylan, what you were doing. I want to talk about the text messages. I have some questions about that. Let's just go through what you think Dylan was feeling. Was he feeling happy? Was he stressed out? Tell us about picking him up from the airport, what you did, what happened when you got home. And let's go from there. So you pick him up at the airport. Is he happy? Is he sullen? What's he doing?
I won't say that he's happy. I think that there was something on his mind. And in many ways, he was a little more distant with me than he might otherwise be. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. And obviously, I've had this conversation with law enforcement. And it was clear to me, and it's clear to a lot of people, that there was something going on with him, and I have no knowledge of what that is. And so, you know, I'm trying to make the most of that. And so I picked him up from the airport. His flight was late coming in. There were some issues with that. You know, we left the airport. We went directly to Walmart.
What do you mean? Let me stop you, Mark. What do you mean by there's issues with that? What did you mean?
Issues with?
With the plane being late, when you say there was issues.
Well, his flight was about an hour late getting in. And as far as I know, there was some delay in the departure from the Colorado Springs area. And knowing what I went through in his previous flight, where he actually went to Denver first and made a transfer to a flight to Durango, I specifically made arrangements so that we could eliminate that flight out of Denver and make it so that he had a direct flight from Colorado Springs to Durango.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what the issues were. It could have been a slight mechanical problem. All I know is
I see what you're saying. Oh, I thought
the flight was coming in.
Got it. Okay, so you pick him up, and then you go to McDonald's first or Walmart?
No, we went directly to Walmart. Mm-hmm. You know, we got out of the truck. We talked about what we always talk about when we go to Walmart. He's going to go to the video section and check out the toys and music and that kind of thing. And I'm going to go do what I went there to do, which would be to gather the items that I had on a short list of things that we would need to tide us over for a few days while we got closer to figuring out what we were going to do for the Thanksgiving holiday.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you were figuring out what you were going to do, how was he responding to you? Was he sullen? What was the deal?
He was perfectly fine. I mean, he wasn't necessarily acting abnormal by any means. You know, when we walked in the door, he was ahead of me. Apparently, I have a tendency to walk slow. And, you know, he went off in the direction that he went off in, and I went off in the direction that I went in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what we always do. I mean, it's always like that. So that was nothing mm-hmm. that was out of the ordinary in my mind. Now, you know, obviously at some point I got done doing what I needed to do, and I tracked him down, and he had gathered a couple, you know, movies out of the dollar bin. We were in line getting our stuff, and from there we had a conversation about getting something to eat. I wanted to go sit down at a sit-down restaurant and eat, and he wanted to go to McDonald's. So as it turned out, he got what he wanted. We went to McDonald's. We got it through the drive-thru, and we ate it on our way back to the house here.
When you say he got what he wanted, I sense maybe a bit of, like, irritation. You really didn't want to go to McDonald's, or no, it didn't matter to you?
I didn't really want to go to McDonald's, no. But, you know, it wasn't something that was worth fighting with him over by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easier for me to give him what he wants, which is typically what I do the majority of the time. But it's very difficult for me to tell him no, given the fact that I travel as much as I do and I don't spend as much time with him as I would like to be able to do. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, something I've learned over time is you kind of got to pick your battles, and that's certainly not a battle that I'm willing to pick.
Okay. And so you go home, and you're watching movies. What else are you doing?
Well, I think it's important to understand that the drive between Durango and the drive to the area in which I live is about a 45-minute ride. And the majority of that time, we don't have cell phone coverage. So it's very difficult, if possible at all, to have any kind of cell phone communication. Now, obviously, we were eating our dinner that we had purchased at McDonald's for a portion of that particular ride. But it wasn't until we got to the lake area that Dylan was able to start communicating with his friends via the text.
Mm-hmm.
So he's busy texting his friends and making arrangements, because obviously we were conversing with each other. And, you know, one of the things that he had asked me was, could he go to his friend's house? Well, it's Sunday night, you know, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock by that time. I personally don't feel like it's appropriate to spend time at your friend's house, given the fact that it's Sunday night and it's
mm-hmm.
getting later in the evening. And so I told him that I didn't think that that was necessary. So I'm assuming, based on the things that have come out, that the conversation with Dylan and his friends had everything to do with Dylan making plans to be able to get with his friends as early as possible the next day,
mm-hmm.
which included getting up with me when I left to go take care of my business in Durango, that he would be up and at him and ready to go with me, be able to have me drop him off at his friend's house.
Okay. So you were going to drop him off at his friend's house was the plan in
absolutely,
the morning.
And, absolutely.
And
well,
what time
I
was that?
Drop him off. Well, I got up, I'm going to say somewhere around 5:30 or so, made coffee,
mm-hmm.
sat around, you know, tried to make as much noise as I can to kind of gently stir Dylan and wake him up and get him moving in the right direction. And you know, as 6:30 rolled around, which was the target time for me to leave to go take care of my business,
mm-hmm.
you know, Dylan isn't responding to any of that. So, you know, I'm hollering his name, I'm, you know, whistling, doing all the things that I would normally do when I'm trying
mm-hmm.
to get him awake. You know, again, you know, I do it in a gentle manner. I'm not going to go startle him by any means and have him wake up and be all alarmed. So I spent probably 35, 45 minutes, maybe even close to an hour, trying to get his attention, and I couldn't get through to him. And I wasn't surprised by that necessarily, because part of the conversation that we had was that he had been up till 4 o'clock in the morning with his friends the night before, and then he had spent the majority of the day in the airports traveling to get to Durango. So
mm-hmm.
I didn't find it at all odd that he was so tired that it was difficult for him to want to wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Did that irritate you at all? Did that make you frustrated, or you were just, hey, it's just typical kid type stuff?
No, it's typical kid type stuff. This is the same thing that he and I go through every time he spends time with me. And, you know, where he's hard to get to sleep and hard to get up, I tend to be the opposite. I go to bed earlier, I get up earlier,
mm-hmm.
and I'll pace around the floor, I'll turn the music on, you know, I'll holler his name, I'll get something cooking on the stove. And, you know, he wakes up when he's ready to wake up. This
mm-hmm.
is the way it's always been with he and I.
So you're saying that you weren't angry there, because let me just tell you, I'm going to play devil's advocate, Mark, okay? Because I'm going to say what other people are telling me and what they're thinking here. Are you ready?
Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. issues with the plane landing. I thought you meant that you were annoyed for some reason with Dylan. Okay, he's kind of sullen. Yeah, I know. Hold on. I'm not saying that's true. That's just was what I first thought. That's why I asked the question. And then he's, you know, you can tell there's something wrong. He's really kind of just into himself and not very talkative. He wants to go to McDonald's. You want to go to a restaurant. He wants to go visit his friends. You don't want him to. It sounds like there is a lot of conflict there. And I think that's the problem, Mark, is there's conflict. It's just minor conflict. But I think that's why people are going, wow, maybe he got really angry. And I need you to clear that up for us.
Well, and it is minor conflict. I mean, it's not, you know, the majority of the time that me and Dylan spend time together has always been where he was already in the area in which I live.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be a matter of picking up the phone and say, hey, Dylan, I'm in town. He'd be like, great, come get me. And,
mm-hmm.
and it was as simple as that. You know, given the fact that he had recently relocated to Colorado Springs and we're getting him on flights and airplanes, and I'm sure there was some stress involved with that for him. There was stress involved with me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously, I'm in no position to make a big deal out of any of this because I certainly can sympathize with where he's coming from.
Sure.
At that age.
Exactly.
And, you know, my only goal is to give him space, give him time, let him come around. This is how he is. This is how he and I interact all the time whenever there's any kind of conflict. And, you know, going to McDonald's and giving him the opportunity to do what he wants was just one step closer to eliminating that conflict, quote unquote.
Got it. Okay. So I want to take you, and I don't mean to skip around. We're talking with Mark Redwine, Dylan Redwine's father. And Dylan went missing at Mark's house sometime in November, that November morning, we believe. And there has been no trace of him. That's November 2012. Okay, Mark, let's just back up just a bit. So you come home. I want to hear about the movies and what happened that night. Because you guys weren't really interested in the movie, right? But you saw him texting. Is that correct?
Well, you know, obviously we drive by the lake. He's texting his friends. We get to the house. And one of the first things that we did was Dylan ran upstairs to his bedroom to get the DVD player so
mm-hmm.
that we could watch the movie that he had just purchased from Walmart while I put away what few groceries or things that I had purchased from Walmart so that we could get by for the next several days until
mm-hmm.
we could better decide what we're going to do for the holiday. So it was probably somewhere around 8:30 time frame by the time we actually had the DVD hooked up and Dylan did all of that. Put the DVD in the player, started it, and obviously we're going through, you know, the I don't know what you call them, the advertisements and the upcoming different movies that they might do.
Yes, uh-huh.
And, you know, at some point we started watching the movie. So, you know, I got to be honest with you. It wasn't a movie that I would normally watch, and I'm not a big movie person to begin with. But, again,
mm-hmm.
it was one of those things that I could do with Dylan because that's what Dylan wanted to do.
What was the movie?
And, oh, I forget exactly what it was now. It was about a teenage kid in a roller coaster theme park, and he was involved with some girl that worked there, and they became close, and
mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the movie, to be honest.
Okay, that's okay. That's okay. So it was a kid thing. It was a teenage thing.
It was a teenage movie, I would agree.
Okay. So anyway, you're not liking the movie, and is Dylan watching it, or what's going on?
Well, there was a lot of things going on at that particular time. I mean, Dylan had grabbed his computer. He was interacting with Facebook. I know that he also has a lot of games that he plays on the computer in that, so he could have been doing that for some period of time. Obviously, at some point, he was texting, communicating with his friends. There were times when we were talking and trying to better get an idea again of what we were going to be doing for Thanksgiving. We had talked about going to my brother's house. you know, just little things like that. You know, there would be times when we'd start getting back into the movie and nothing was being said, you know. This is a point that I argued with law enforcement over and over again, because originally, when this all was happening, that they said that Dylan's phone stopped being used at 8 o'clock. And I said, that's not right. I'm telling you that Dylan was sitting on the end of the couch texting somebody. Now, I didn't pay attention to what kind of device he was using. And quite frankly, I don't even know to this day what he was
right.
doing. But I can tell you that, you know, later on it came out that he was texting till the 9:30 time frame.
And we don't know what the last text is. That is something that law enforcement has not shared with you. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know any information pertaining to any of the text messages that were sent, other than the conversations that Dale and I were having as it relates to him trying to make arrangements with his friend so that if he was getting up with me at 6:30, as he had indicated that night, that he would have the ability to get to his friend's house and his friends would be aware that he was coming at such an early time of the morning.
Okay, so now we go to the morning, and you're trying to wake him up, and he won't wake up. This is typical. This is nothing unusual. My teenage son is the exact same way. If he's dead asleep, it is really hard to wake him up. And you're saying, come on, Dylan, you want to go to your friend's house? Let's go, let's go. He didn't wake up, so you leave, correct?
I did leave. And, again, I mean, the whole point of me from getting up early and doing that from the very beginning was so that I could get my needs out of the way and I could be back here to fulfill Dylan's needs. So, again, this is the same thing that Dylan and I have gone through for years in trying to get him up when he doesn't have to get up to go to school. He doesn't want to get up. He doesn't want to go to bed. That's how Dylan is. He's always been that way. I can't speak to, you know, how Dylan is when he's not with me. I can only talk about what I know Dylan is when he is with me. And this is the same thing we've gone through with him for years and years and years and years.
Does that irritate you that he's that way?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
It's part of who he is, and I've accepted that. And I'm not looking to change that.
Okay.
I accept that that's who he is. My point being is that I didn't find it at all odd that as much as people want to believe that he wanted to go pee with his friends at 6:30 in the morning, I don't at all find it odd that he was not waking up, given the fact that he was as tired as he was.
Right. Yeah, that, you know, honestly, just standing back and looking at it, Mark, that doesn't seem unusual at all. To have a kid get up at 6:30 when he's been up so late the night before and the night before that probably. To me, that doesn't seem strange at all. So you leave and run and do your errands, but at this point you don't know really what the plan is. Is that correct? You're not sure. You're just assuming when you get home Dylan will be there, or what's going on in your head now? What are you thinking?
Well, the plan, as far as I know at that point, was that Dylan getting over here, he obviously wanted to spend time with his friends. So the plan that was in place was for me to go take care of my errands, get back here as quickly as I could, and get him down to Dayfield to spend time with his friends, understanding that in doing that, it would be Monday night, you know, probably all day Tuesday. Wednesday we were kind of having it up in the air, because that is a day that we could have done something as Dylan and I, and included his friends, or we could have made that a travel day to get to my brother's house, who's about 6 or 7 hours away. Specifically so that we could have spent Thanksgiving Day with my brother and his family, which is something that Dylan had acknowledged that he would be interested in doing.
Exactly. Okay, that sounds good. That's all of this sounds pretty much normal. So, you get your errands done. What time do you get home?
Oh, it's probably about 11:30 or so.
Okay, you get home Go ahead. No, you tell me. What happened.
Well, I walk in the front door, the TV's on, you know, so at this point I know Dylan's up and at him doing something. You know, I noticed there was a cereal bowl on the counter and a box of cereal, and, you know, and I'm hollering out for him. He doesn't respond. I didn't think mm-hmm. much of it because it's not unlike Dylan to wander off, given the fact of where I live. I mean, there's creeks in the front yard. There's rivers across the street. There's all kinds of open areas up the road or behind me or various places Dylan could go off and wander. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't find that particularly odd. What
may
I found
I ask you,
odd
may,
was...
May, and I'll get to what you found odd in just a moment. But you say you didn't find it, you wouldn't think it odd if he'd go out and walk around. Had he done that before in the past, just left and you came
absolutely.
Home and he wasn't there and then came back? Okay.
Well, not so much when I would necessarily be gone away running errands. You know, I could mm-hmm. be sitting in the house doing something and he would go outside and, you know, sometimes I'll find him playing with cars and little army men and various different things in the front yard, and it's not uncommon for him to take off. And, you know, I've seen him come home with friends in the neighborhood who come up here in the summer months, and he finds somebody his age, and next thing you know, he's hanging out with them for periods of time or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's not uncommon for him to leave the house for short periods of time, which is what I found uncommon, was that
okay.
he was gone for as long as he was.
So you come home.
Started...
Okay, you come home and you're thinking he'll be home anytime soon. He doesn't come home, and that's what you found to be very surprising to you. That's when your concern started to grow. Am I correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was a couple hours of him not showing his face that I started to become concerned and a little bit alerted. I mean, I'm not pushing the panic button by any means, but, you know, I'm at this point, I want to know where the boy is, and I want to know that he's okay, and I want to know that, you know, he's in a safe environment. So that's
this is after a couple of hours, right?
It was a couple of hours, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, at some point, I laid down and took a brief nap. I mean, it's not like I fell asleep for 3 hours or anything like that. I laid down for a little while and thinking that he's just going to walk in the door, and be honest with you, it probably wasn't much of a nap at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was just an opportunity for me to lay down.
For what, 10, 15, 30 minutes? Do you have any idea?
I would say probably about 30, 45 minutes maybe.
Okay. Did you notice anything missing right away when you walked in and saw Dylan wasn't home? Did you notice anything else missing right away?
Well, I didn't notice anything right away. I mean, you know, when Dylan didn't return in what I thought would be a reasonable amount of time for him to have done so, I started looking for his fishing pole, thinking that, well, maybe he wandered off to his friend that lives by the marina and they went fishing, because that's something
mm-hmm.
that he's done the last 3 or 4 times that he's been up here, you know. And so at that point, I couldn't find his fishing pole. And, you know, it's not like it wouldn't be in the last place that it was left or in a place that it is normally kept. Again, I travel a lot, so, you know, something that he left in a particular area in August would still be there by November if I'm out of town
mm-hmm.
for 3 months and nobody's here to disturb it. So, you know, I'm looking in the most obvious location. You know, when I look in his bedroom and it's not there, the most obvious place would have been next to the TV, downstairs, next to a chair. It wasn't there. I looked in the garage, in between the two garage doors, which is the
mm-hmm.
third most obvious place that it would be, and it wasn't there. That's why I've always assumed that he had his fishing pole.
Mm-hmm. And so now you think he's gone fishing. When did you start? First of all, did Dylan had his? You assume Dylan had his phone with him because it wasn't home. It wasn't anywhere, correct?
Well, absolutely. And I've been trying to communicate with him.
You've been trying to call him.
I tried to call and text message him while I was in the Durango area before I came home to see if there was anything that he needed, or, you know, maybe talk to him and get some more concrete idea of what we might be doing, being I was in town and I'm 45 minutes away, that if, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to have Thanksgiving at the house here, that I want to be able to get a turkey a couple days in advance and that kind of thing. So, you know, there was a need for me to try to communicate to him before I came home from returning my errands.
Did it go straight to voicemail, or were you able to hear it ring and then leave a message?
No, it always says, and he has Verizon cell phone service, and it always says
mm-hmm.
something like, please listen to the music while your party
okay.
is trying to
it's
be
being reached,
or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it was like that for days.
Okay. So now you've looked, can't find his fishing pole, you notice the backpack's gone, and that's all he brought with him, right, was a backpack? He didn't have any other luggage?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Even at that point, I didn't notice the backpack because I
oh,
wasn't
you didn't?
Looking
okay.
for it. I was looking.
Okay.
I was more concerned about Dylan, and mm-hmm. you know the, and trying to figure out where he might have been. And so at some point, and this was probably about 3 hours after I had originally gotten home, that
mm-hmm.
I'm getting in my truck and I'm gonna go. I'm on a mission now. I'm going to find out where this boy of mine's at.
Mm-hmm. So
and
you
so
get in the truck.
The first place. I get in my truck. The first place I go is to his friend's house that lives across from the marina. I knock on the door, and I get no answer. So I start to think, well, maybe, you know, this is obviously a time when all kids are out of school, and there's no reason
mm-hmm.
for him not to be here unless maybe by chance he's with Dylan. And they did go fishing. So I'm driving mm-hmm. by the lake looking for any signs of a couple boys being out on the shoreline fishing. I didn't notice anything. But, again, I'm trying to figure out where Dylan is, and I want to make contact with him. So I proceeded
mm-hmm.
on to the Bayfield area. I was able to go to another one of his friend's house who lives in Bayfield, and there was two of them that came to the door. And the first words out of my mouth were, have you seen or heard from Dylan today? And their response was, no, we've been trying to get a hold of him all day. We haven't seen or heard from him either. And
okay.
that's when a panic button started to be applied, and I immediately went to the Bayfield Marshal's office to express my concerns about Dylan with them. And in doing so, you know, they were obviously inputting whatever information they could into a computer database. And my understanding is it was linked to the various police departments in the county and the sheriff's department, and everybody was all on the same page at the click of a button. But as it turns
mm-hmm.
out, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Exactly. So you're at this point thinking, okay, they're going to notify the sheriff. Probably didn't even really occur to you. You just assumed law enforcement, everybody's going to be notified, and everyone's going to go and start looking. What time was this? Approximately what time? You got home at 11:30. You're at the marshal's office. What time is that?
I'm guessing somewhere between 4:30, maybe 5 o'clock, the latest.
Okay. So then you tell the marshals this. Then what happens?
Well, at that point, they're advising me that the best thing I can do is get back to the house in the event that Dylan's up at the house. He's returned from wherever he may be. And so I proceed back up to where I live. In doing that, I again stop by his friend's house who lives up the lake and knock on the door again. And finally, he came to the door. I told him that I'd stopped by earlier, knocked on the door. He indicated that he never heard the door, me knocking at the door, that he might have been up in a back bedroom and never heard it. And, you know, I expressed my concerns to him. And again, you know, he hadn't seen or heard from Dylan. And during that, all of that time, I received a message from my former wife indicating that she called the sheriff's department. They had no record of me being at the marshal's office. I
mm-hmm.
shortly thereafter got a phone call from my divorce attorney who had received a call from her divorce attorney. And I'm trying to figure out who in the hell calls her a divorce attorney when we're looking for a child here. But, you know, again, I was back to the house waiting for the deputies to come, making sure that Dylan wasn't back at the house and, you know, it was a false alarm and all those kinds.
Mm-hmm. Well, you asked, when you stopped at the friend's house, I'm just getting kind of a feeling here, maybe I'm wrong. Do you think that perhaps a friend of Dylan's is not being as truthful as they should be? Are you have any suspicions in that area?
Obviously, that thought had crossed my mind at some point, but based on the conversations that I've had with law enforcement, that they've had multiple interviews with this friend of Dylan's and have included his parents as well. So, you know, I'm led to believe by law enforcement that all of those avenues have been thoroughly checked out and there's no reason to be concerned. You know, doesn't mean that, you know, it's not possible that something could have happened or something could have gone awry and, you know, somehow this is trying to be covered up. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't address that. I would like to believe that law enforcement is good enough in their job that had they had any suspicions about anything like that, that they would have pursued that. And to my knowledge, they have no interest in Dylan's friend or anything else as it relates to that particular friend.
Do you think they're still interested in you?
Well, I think they're always going to be interested in me. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. the starting point for anything in a situation like this is, you know, knowing and understanding Dylan's whereabouts as they are known to be left. And, mm-hmm. you know, I embrace that. I have no issues with, you know, being under the microscope, for lack of a better way of saying it, because I think that it's very important in cooperating mm-hmm. with authorities, and that's what exactly what I've done all along. I've done everything that they've ever asked me to do, and I've
okay.
talked to them over and over again. You know, I'm at a point now where if they're in the area, they'll stop by. If I got something I need to address with them, and I think they even are in the area, that I'll let them know to either stop by, and if they're not in the area, to give me a call.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I talk to them as much as I possibly think it's necessary to do. I don't talk to them every day, but, mm-hmm. you know, one of the agreements that we had in this conflict resolution meeting was to communicate once a week. So I've marked it on my calendar that one day every week I'm going to touch base with law enforcement. I'm going to let them know anything that I've got going on. I'm going to ask them what they might have going on, and if there's anything that maybe Elaine has going on that can be communicated to me, so that we are all on the same page doing the same exact things and the benefit of finding our son.
I just want to, and I'm jumping around here a bit because I'm looking at the chat room, and I'm just going to give you some questions. Last week in our interview, you talked about the Nerf football being thrown around. I assume that's when you were watching the movie, or just kind of tossing that Nerf football back and forth. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that Dylan and I do quite a bit of. I mean, we don't do it all the time, but, you know, the majority of the time that that's going on, we're obviously outside.
Right,
and
but this time you're inside.
Side of the road. He'll be on one side of the road, I'll be on the other side, and we'll pass the football back and forth to each other. You know, that's always a great way to open him up. And so, you know, as we're passing around the football, goofing around, you know, that the whole point of that was for whatever tension was in the air, not that there was anything in the way of tension in terms of my position, but I think that that's been perceived, and that's what I'm trying to clear up. But anyway, I mean, it's something that we do. I mean, it's something that we do when we're sitting around, you know, on opposite ends of the furniture, passing the football back.
Well, let me just address what you just said. So you're watching the movie and tossing the Nerf football. It's a Nerf football, people. It's not a real football. It can't hurt anything. You said there was tension. Were you feeling tension? I need you to elaborate on that for me.
Well, obviously, I think that it was a stressful time for Dylan because, you know, in September we were in a court hearing. His mom had filed a motion for him to speak directly to the judge in judge's chambers. You know, that all took place. For whatever reason, from that point until the time that he got on the plane, there was little or no contact at all between the two of us, although I tried many, 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 many times to
mm-hmm.
text message him or communicate with him and open up to him about, you know, making plans for the holiday or whatever the case may be. So I don't know what was going on with him at that time frame. And, you know, again, I could sense that there was something going on there, but, again, I'm not looking to make a big deal out of any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the bottom line is he and I never, you know, exchanged words with each other or ever in any way had any kind of argument or any of that. All I was doing is doing everything in my power to give him space to open up at his own, in his own terms, so mm-hmm. that he and I were on the same page about what we were going to do during the time that he was here with me.
Okay, I'm glad you're clearing this up. This is helping a lot. Let's talk a little bit about what your former wife Elaine said last week on this show. She said that you and Brandon, that is Dylan's half-brother, correct?
That's correct.
And
correct.
You were looking for Dylan. And you went to go to a particular area, and according to Elaine, you told Brandon, this searching here is stupid, he's not here. And Brandon was very taken aback by that. You had a chance to call Brandon and clear this up, correct?
Well, I did, because I'm not going to take Elaine's word for it based on the way she said it, so I went right to the horse's mouth, so to speak. So the next day, I got a hold of Brandon, and as I suspected, it involved a particular day when we were being directed to an area to be handing out flyers and communicating with residents that was on the east side of the town of Bayfield. Now, that... understanding that, you need to also understand that the road traveling up in that area is on the east side of the mountain range that sits in front of my house. So the road that I live in is on the west side, and the road that we are on traveling to do this, and I'll be honest with you, there were very few houses that we came across. We were almost to a point where we were out of cell phone reach when I got a call from Elaine's friend, who had indicated that there was an Albuquerque news reporter there and wanted to do an interview. So we kind of turned around, and I probably did. And this is what Brandon and I talked about, made a comment that it was kind of stupid to be going up in the middle of nowhere on the mountain range across from the one in my house when there's no direct route there. You would have had to go to Bayfield and then go all the way around. There's no direct route over there. And so, you know, to clarify that, you know, I thought it was probably a little bit on the ridiculous side at that point to be wasting time in an area that I can't possibly conceive Dylan could have been in. You know, when there's so many other areas that were, in my opinion, more important in that. But I guess to clarify that, I think that it's one of the many things that Dylan's mother tends to exaggerate more than anything else.
It tends to exaggerate what... Well, so what did Brandon say to you? Tell me exactly what he said when you said, were you taken aback by what I said? Did that shock you? What did he say?
Well, again, he and I were talking about the specific location and where we are and what we were doing at that time. And as I suspected, we were in an area that would have been nearly impossible at that point for Dylan have been in, and I felt like it was a waste of our time to be up in this area because there's few, if any, houses up there at all. And
but what did you? But when the, I'm just talking about when you last week when you got a hold of Brandon, what did he say to you?
He downplayed the exaggeration that Elaine made it sound like when she was on your show. And, you know, not arguing that I said that it was ridiculous to be looking for Dylan in this location because it was so far gone it would have been nearly impossible for Dylan to be in that area. And then he didn't at all take it as being, you know, an alarm bell going off in his head by any means. But, you know, I can certainly appreciate the fact that he might have been a bit stricken by the fact that I would insinuate at any point that any place is not important enough to be looking for our son.
Right. I see what you're saying. Okay. That's one thing I wanted to clear up. We've had a lot of people in chat ask about this, and we've talked about it, but I'm going to just bring it up one more time because, Mark, this is really important to clear this up, and I hope you can continue to stay with us. You've been with us for quite a while. Can we continue on?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. A lot of people are talking about the polygraph again, and let's get on to that. Have you taken another polygraph with the police? Would you take one if they asked you? And if you have taken one, go ahead.
I have taken a polygraph test when I was asked to do so. I am not a person that necessarily believes that a polygraph is going to be the difference maker in what it's going to take to find her son. Now, I believe that this is a debate that can be held for days and days and days with absolutely no resolution. The bottom line is, I don't think a polygraph test is any more than a form of junk science.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I was willing to take a polygraph test, which from the very beginning, and never wavered from, never said anything, I was actually sitting in the office waiting for this person to come back from lunch. So I immediately left my home to go take this polygraph test. And I'll be honest with you. Law enforcement has never shared the results of those polygraph tests.
Okay.
I can only tell you what I was told by law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for whatever reason, they don't want to release that information for whatever reason. I don't know.
They
told me I failed miserably. Now, I'm trying to understand what that actually means. I mean, there's only four or five questions that they're asking you on. Is it possible that I failed my name? Is it possible I failed my birth date? Did I fail, you know, if there's only five questions and you failed it miserably, that pretty much tells me that I would have had to fail all five questions.
Mm-hmm. So,
again, I think this is a debate that we can have for days and days and days on end, and at the end, it's only going to be a debate. Some people believe in them. Some people don't believe in them.
Would you take another one if they asked you?
Well, I'll tell you, that kind of came up in this last thing that Elaine and I participated in the conflict resolution. In my opinion, in law enforcement official that was there, and I'm not sure that Elaine didn't agree, that ship has sailed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It wouldn't be useful at this point, is what you're feeling.
I don't think so. I think that a polygraph is only a tool that is used by law enforcement. This is what they've reiterated to me over and over and over and over again. It's only a tool. That being said, it's no different than a carpenter building a house. I mean, obviously you got to have a hammer to do that. It's only one of many tools that is important to utilize, from whether it be law enforcement's perspective or a carpenter building a home. It's not the only tool available, and it's not the only tool that we should be utilizing here.
What other tools do you think you should be utilizing?
Well, I think that the media is a great source.
That's very good. Absolutely, yes.
And unfortunately, I think that the media has been kind of pushed aside in all of this because, you know, they see what I call the circus or freak show going on the sidelines, and I'll be honest with you, I think that the media has kind of distanced themselves in many ways, and that has harmed Dylan in our search for him, and it has helped.
And so, if I understand, your goal is to get out there and get the media interested in Dylan again, and they should be interested, especially coming from the father of the missing child. I can't imagine that you couldn't get a lot of the much-needed publicity to get Dylan's face out there. Do you have a specific idea of what your next move is going to be to find Dylan?
Well, my move is, because I obviously don't think that he's in the area or in the county or necessarily even in the state of Colorado, I want to take his story to a national level. And that means if I got to travel personally all 48 states and talk to every newspaper reporter and TV reporter that I can get 5 minutes of their time, then by God, then that's what I'll do.
And when are you going to start
that? That's what I'm working.
Okay, you're working on it now?
I'm in the process of making that arrangement, and it's something I've been working on for some time. I was hopeful that I could have already been in the process of that. But, you know, I was delayed in that because of the mediation or conflict resolution hearing that we've had. And so, you know, that's something that I was hoping to have more concrete finalization on as of the end of this past week or the very beginning of this upcoming week.
So you're just wanting to, not just wanting, but what you want to do is to contact, starting with newspapers, and perhaps maybe even locally, and kind of work your way out, go to Utah, go to Arizona, kind of work your way out to the United States. I'd be glad to help you, you know, with some names and numbers, Mark, if you want them. I've got some. I'd be glad to pass them along to you. Just people you can call and talk to.
Well, and I think that the most local newspaper here pretty much has a handle on, you know, the situation with mm-hmm. Dylan. I'll be honest with you, though. There's very little being reported about Dylan's case and very little attention by the media, and I find that a bit bothersome, the fact that, you know, I believe that this is a big human rights kind of story that people would be interested in, yet there's little mm-hmm. or nothing going on. You know, there are media people that I've come acquainted with over the last 6 and 7 months that, you know, I've been working with, and I try to keep them informed. But even they seem to not have a whole lot of interest mm-hmm. in where things are. I certainly thought that this meeting with Elaine in Boulder was a big thing that would have been covered by the media, because for the first time in all these months was the opportunity for Elaine and I to sit down in a controlled environment in a civil way and sit down and address this.
Mm-hmm. And the media didn't cover it at all, did they?
Well, they didn't. You know, I mean, I obviously let them know that the meeting was going to occur, when it was going to occur, and, you know, they made it sound like that there was a possibility that they would have, you know, somebody to report that as we mm-hmm. were maybe coming out of the meeting or whatever the case may be, but it never happened. So I'm losing faith in the fact that the media is at all out there trying to, you know, keep Dylan's story alive. So I have to figure out some way to be able to do that. And I can't think of a better way than to be on a mission and mm-hmm. make every effort that I can to talk to newspaper people or TV people and share this story. And sooner or later, people are going to see me out there talking to them and say, hey, look, man, this guy's doing everything he can. He's out there on a national campaign to bring Dylan's story to a national level. And, you know, I'm only doing what I can do.
Exactly. And as sad as this is, Mark, what I'm about to tell you is true. It's all about in the repackaging and the delivering of it. If the media thinks there is a new twist to the story, then they'll cover it. I'm not saying it's right. I think it's wrong. But that's just how it is. So your twist, and you're adding to that twist, and the way you present the twist in the case will have a lot to do with who responds. And I think that's really important for you to work on, and I know you're working on it. But, you know, there's all kinds of ideas that we can help you come up with that you can get national media attention by doing these things. So we'll talk off the air about that. But just know that that's how you work with the media, is if you have the same information, you repackage it a different way and send it out to catch their attention. I just have a couple more questions here from the chat room, Mark, if I may. This is really helping a lot. Did you hire a private detective?
I haven't. I have been in communication with a private detective firm who has been looking into Dylan's case, and I just recently, at the end of this last week on Friday, was notified by them that they don't have the resources in place to get involved at the level that I'm asking them to be involved in. So I'm asking them to refer me to people that might be in a better position for that kind of thing, or whatever the case may be.
Would you go on Nancy Grace?
I'll be honest with you. I'm not a huge fan of hers, and I don't know that that's the kind of avenue that's going to best get out. It's not that I'm opposed by any means to going on Nancy Grace in that, but
she would be hard on you, Mark, but if, you know, you just go on and tell your story, that will get Dylan's face out there. That's a great start, to be honest. I have no idea if she'll invite you. I have no clue. I don't have any connection to Nancy Grace or even Dr. Drew. Dr. Drew is a little more calm. Would you consider going on one of those shows? Maybe Dr. Drew?
I would. Well, I would, and that's why I that's why I went on the Dr. Phil show, because I firmly believe that we were going to dedicate time to keeping the focus on finding Dylan, and as it turns out, none of that ever happened. So I'll be honest with you. I'm a little bit shy, gun shy, when it comes to who I go to and who I don't go to. It's something that I have to feel comfortable with, because the message that I want people to understand is that regardless of all the things that have gone on over the last 6 and 7 months, nothing has brought Dylan home. And the fact that we still have a 14-year-old boy out there that's missing, our focus needs to be strictly on what we can do to find him and bring him home, which is why in the mediation meeting or conflict resolution meeting that I had with Elaine, I specifically addressed that with Elaine, and basically what I said to her was that I was asking her to take the war out of being a warrior, as is implied, and becoming an army of soldiers whose only interest was to seek the truth, to find justice, and most of all, find Dylan.
How would taking the warrior name off of Dylan's Warriors, I'm assuming that's what you're referring to, how would that help? I'm a little confused.
Because I think that being a warrior implies that you're at war, and in no uncertain circumstances, Elaine has made it quite clear that in her mind, that's exactly what this is a war.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what Dylan needs. What Dylan needs is an army of people whose only interest is seeking the truth from both sides, not just one-sided, justice, so that we can hold the person or persons responsible accountable, and most of all, that we find Dylan and bring him home. And it doesn't mean that you have to change your view or it has to change how you feel. It only means that we are uniting everybody who wants to be out there and be involved in any way that they possibly can, and, you know, keeping the attention on what is important to me and always has been. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's something I'm missing here. But the only thing that I think is important is Dylan and what we can be doing to keep his name out there in the media by whatever means necessary, which isn't happening at this point, and doing everything we can to search under every rock, look in every tree stump, turn over every log, whether it be in Vicedo, the roads leading in and out of Vicedo, whether it be in the town of Bayfield, in La Plata County, in the state of Colorado, or any state in the country. And at this point, it's not unthinkable that he could possibly even be out of the U.S., and he's in a foreign country.
So tomorrow, what's the first thing you're going to do to start this international search? I'll help you any way I can, Mark. I'll give you names of news people all over the country that I have, their contacts.
Well, I can tell you that is already in progress.
Okay, good.
The Mediation Without Borders people have 2,000 eyes camped out in 8 different countries around the world who are now aware of Dylan. And like I said earlier, that there's flyers that have been or are in the process of being printed up in different languages to address, you know, the various countries that these people operate in. And so those things are to some degree are underway. You know, anybody in your listening audience who has anything that they feel they can contribute to, whether it be on a personal level in a foot search or, you know, anything that local law enforcement has in the works in terms of planning for a massive search, which is what they're telling me that they are working on, or whether it be at a professional level who has resources, you know, whether it be private investigation side of things or whatever, anybody out there that has anything that they feel that they can offer that will help find Dylan, I am more than open to sit down and talk with them, because I think that everybody that can help should be allowed the opportunity to do so.
And what about maybe just starting a website where you can put up a phone number if people want to help? Not now, not if people have clues. If they have clues, they got to go to the cops. you don't want to get into that, believe me. But maybe or an email address if you want to help in the search for Dylan. Here's an email. You can set those up for free. May I? That might be a good suggestion. Just help Dylan's dad find Dylan.
That's one of the things that has been set up. Mm-hmm. There's a Facebook page, Find Dylan First, that anybody can go to and, get the most updated information about any searches that are being planned or any information at all that will assist people in becoming involved in our search for Dylan.
And what's the name of the Facebook page again? I apologize. What was that name?
Find Dylan First.
Find Dylan First at Facebook. Okay. And that is the page they can go to if they have something they want to offer you. Because there's people out there, like I said, that, maybe somebody listening knows a reporter at somewhere in Oregon, Washington, whatever, who would be willing to do a story about a man searching the world for his son. Something like that, that they could turn that information over to you. Would you welcome that, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. And, I'm sorry to say that, that for whatever reason, Elaine and I haven't come to a point where we can better work together, because I mm-hmm. certainly don't see this as a competition, and I'm not going to get involved in a competition with her as it relates to finding Dylan. If I got to do what I got to do on my own, then so be it. I would welcome her to join in any efforts and combine the resources so that we're not duplicating and wasting time with that. But, that's her choice, and I can't put words in her mouth, and I would welcome the opportunity to be able to do that. That being said, at this point, I'm in a position where, we've created the Find Dylan First page. I'm closely working with as many reporters as I possibly can to share information with them, hoping that, there will be a story that they will want to tell to keep Dylan in the media and all of that. I certainly thought that, this conflict resolution meeting would have been a twist in the story that would have grabbed their attention. But, so far that hasn't necessarily panned out. But, I mm-hmm. welcome the opportunity to be on shows like yours so that, I can get the word out and explain. How important it is to focus on Dylan and doing everything in our power to be able to bring him home.
I just got a text from Elaine, and before I read it, I want to clear something up, because I'm a little confused. The Find Dylan First Facebook page, is that yours, or is that somebody that has set it up for you, or is that somebody that set it up separate from you and you've just kind of joined them? Can you give us a bit of the background on that?
It's not something that I've done with myself. I don't have mm-hmm. a Facebook account. I've never had a Facebook account. And quite frankly, I don't really want a Facebook account. But I do recognize the fact that social media is a very valuable tool. And this is a group of people who I am in communication with who have taken upon themselves to help me mm-hmm. get a page set up and devoted to only putting out there the information as we need to be able to have conversation,
mm-hmm.
and put out, any efforts that are being made in terms of searching for Dylan and that kind of thing, and to keep Dylan's story out there the best way we can.
Okay, so these people run the page, and they're supporters of yours, basically, and you've hooked up with them. That's not your page, but you've just kind of hooked up with them and said, hey, thanks for helping me out, and we'll continue to communicate. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I communicate with them almost on a daily basis. I have my input on what I think that, is helpful information to post on the Facebook page or what's not. Again, I'm sharing information as I know it to be with law enforcement, conversations that I had, that there is a massive search being planned. There's no date that has been set specifically, but it does include, law enforcement officials. It does include, dogs. It does include volunteers
mm-hmm.
who want to participate in searching for Dylan. And so, you know, it's those people that this page is really designed for, is to reach the people out there who aren't interested in the sideshow, but their only interest is, you know, the people that are out there that want to help find Dylan and want to bring him home and are interested in what's going on with him.
Elaine just texted me and asked me to mention this, and I'm glad to do it. The finddylanredwine.com is the official webpage, and that is where you can go to find information as well. And then the official Facebook page is, Find Missing Dylan Redwine on Facebook is the official page. So I'm going to put that out there for you, Mark. I would still recommend a website. It's something very easy to do, and you can get a domain name set up, and that way you don't have the Facebook fighting and all that drama that goes on with it, and you have a website where people can email you, and you don't have to go wade through all the comments and everything. It's easy to do. I know there's lots of people that would be glad to help you. Just a thought that if you want to go that way. But there's lots of things you can do to get out into the media Dylan's name. And it's hard to know these things, Mark, because you didn't know you were going to be in this position. And, you know, I would advise you, if I may, to let the people help you do something like that. Is a website a possibility, I hope?
Well, it is. And I guess, you know, looking back over the last 7 months, I guess I put too much effort into trying to be involved or contributing in a positive way to what had already been in place. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's never worked out for me. And, you know, instead of trying to beat my head against the wall and trying to understand why, at this point, I'm taking a different direction. And so, you know, if I got to go out there and start over from scratch and do all these kinds of things, but yes, I'm very open to anybody that can help assist me with that, or somebody that might be knowledgeable of that, or mm-hmm. obviously, you know, take that advice that you're giving and run with it and, you know, do those kinds of things. I've never thought it necessary to have two of everything out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that just creates more confusion than is necessary.
Well,
but that's
my
personal opinion.
Right. Well, and it can. Mark's former wife, Polly's mom, has a different organization than Mark has, and it just works out better that way. And it's important to concentrate on what you're going to do to find Dylan, and you just kind of have to, you know, put on those glasses and focus on finding Dylan and do what you need to do personally, if I may offer this advice. Setting up a website. Go ahead.
And I agree with that, and I think that is slow coming for me. I'm not the smartest person that ever walked the planet, I'll be honest mm-hmm. with you. In mm-hmm. that. And, you know, again, I guess I held on to the thought that, you know, finding Dylan was the most important thing that any of us can be involved in. And that being said, you know, if this is the direction that I need to travel to keep Dylan's story out there, then that's mm-hmm. so be it. I've come to understand that that's what I need to be doing. You know,
got
there's
it.
No handbook that's ever giving out to a parent in a situation like this to guide you step by step from start to finish on how to do these things.
Right.
And so it's a learning process, and it's a learning curve. And I am open to anybody out there who can help me and have something to contribute, because I know in my heart that there is a lot of people out there that are standing in the wings waiting for an opportunity to do something to help bring Dylan home.
And when you are out and about in your travels, do you have posters of Dylan that you can hang? I mean, because I'm sure they put them up in 7-Elevens and you can put them on, telephone poles. Do you do that?
Well, I have them, and I have been out. I mean, I've been into, you know, neighboring towns and communities to the Durango and Bayfield area, like Dolores mm-hmm. and Cortez, and as far away as places like Dove Creek. But, you know, I'm in a geographical oddity so to speak, when I'm up here at the lake, because I'm so far away from mainstream, you know, whether it be the small town of Bayfield or Durango, you know, there's not a whole lot going on, and there's very little communication, and there's very little, you know, information out there that I've been able to access that addresses that. I mean, obviously, there have been people up at my house recently, some of which have been people who are connected in trying to make all the tourists that we're starting to get come in aware. So they've reposted a lot of the flyers that have been out of date. There's more and more of them out there. I think that's great. If I was aware of those kind of things going on, I would be the first one in line to be out there assisting them and helping out in that.
But don't you think that, you can take posters and just in your travels, you know, one day go to this town or that town, or even send posters to people you know in different parts of the country, because I bet they would love to help. That's what I'm saying,
well,
where you can pick up and do things like that that I think would be very easy, or am I wrong?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I intend to do. I mean, if I can't be, you know, communicating with a newspaper reporter or a TV station, I can be hitting every truck stop in the country.
Sure. Exactly. That's exactly right.
That's exactly what I have in mind. And yes, you know, there are flyers out there that I am getting printed up, and I'm taking my fight to the rope.
When you get those printed up, let me know, because we have people all over the world. I bet we could send those flyers out, even if it's just a handful of people that they can put up just in their local area, and that way Dylan's face can be all over the country. So when those flyers are done, contact me, Mark, and we'll get it out there for you, okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
That's
listen,
great. That's the kind of that's what I'm trying to get done here.
Well, good.
The best way I know it.
That we'll just keep in touch then, and when those flyers are done, hopefully it won't take too long, we'll get them out for you. And I'll tell you what, next week we're pretty booked on Trisha's True Crime Radio, but the week after that, Mark Redwine, perhaps you can come on and talk to us and update us. By that time, you might be able to tell us where your travels have taken you and what you have found out and what's in the future. Maybe by that time, we will have found, please God willing, your son Dylan. That is the main goal, is to bring him home safely. So, Mark Redwine, I know it's tough, and you've been answering the tough questions. I do appreciate it, and I hope you'll join us in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. You take care, and don't forget to contact me as soon as those posters are done, and we'll get them out there for you, okay?
All right, and thank you, your listening audience, for allowing me the opportunity to share this story.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Whoops, I accidentally cut him off. Sorry, Mark. Wow, okay, well, there you go. I've noticed in the chat room that nobody's mind was changed about Mark Redwine. You either believe him or you don't. And no matter what he says, will not sway one side or the other. So the invitation is out there. He said he would call me when the posters are done. I'll let you know when that happens, and we'll just keep on keeping on. That's the best thing we can do on Trisha's True Crime Radio. And don't forget, next Sunday, Cheryl McCollum will be here with her students from her Cold Case Research Institute. And remember, they were asked to sign up which side they wanted to be on in the George Zimmerman case, whether they believed George or they didn't believe him, and then the teacher switched them. So the people have to do just the opposite of what they believe in putting this case together, and we're going to let them argue the case right here on Trisha's True Crime Radio. That's next week at 8 o'clock Eastern, and Trisha's True Crime Radio is brought to you by the No-Kill Animal Shelters in your area. Our sponsor, in honor of his wife, Nance, has asked all of you to support the No-Kill Shelters right by your home. These shelters need everything, basically, volunteers, money, food, anything you can think of. So look up your local no-kill shelter today and offer to help. Please, please, everyone can do a small part to help our innocent animals. And do remember, Trisha's True Crime Radio is a different entity totally from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. What we say here, it is on here and stays here, and the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent my viewpoint or anybody else's viewpoint, but it is the viewpoints on Trisha's True Crime Radio. We're not connected to websleuth.com, LLC, or forumsforjustice.org. Okay, I think I have all the legal goo out of the way. Everybody have a great night, and we'll see you here next week. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events. And, of course, we always do it with common sense. Good night, everybody.